Welcome to the Resilient Recruiter Podcast. I'm your host, Mark Whitby, and today we're joined by Jeremy Jensen. Jeremy is the founder and CEO of Encore Search Partners, the largest privately owned executive search firm based in Houston, Texas. Since starting the business in 2013, Jeremy has scaled ESP to $10 million in direct hire revenue, which is pretty incredible. Encore Search Partners' growth is grounded in their seven core company values. I'm interested to learn what those are as we go along here. And they're regularly ranked as one of the Houston Business Journal's best places to work. Jeremy's also a subject matter expert on EOS, which is the Entrepreneurial Operating System. And his entrepreneurial journey extends well beyond the professional sphere. He's negotiated personal hurdles with courage and resilience. Jeremy also hosts his own podcast, The Path to Success. Jeremy, welcome. Thank you so much for being here.
Excellent. Great intro. It's like I wrote it myself.
We collaborated on it, shall
Absolutely.
We say. So, listen, I don't meet very many owners of $10 million search firms. In staffing, where there's temporary or contract revenue, then that it's easier to get to that number, right? But you're doing that just with permanent placement fees, which is amazing. I'd love to hear the journey of how you got there. But first, could you tell us briefly how you got into the search business?
Absolutely. Well, first of all, thank you for having me on, Mark. And pleasure. I should probably update the revenue figures because our trailing 12 months revenue is upwards of $12 million now. But
all right.
So 2010, I started a lead generation firm. So think about like email marketing to generate leads. And I did that for a couple of years. My wife at the time and I were expecting our first child. And I just was kind of like, didn't have any hours in the day. I was just consumed with work. And I was, you know, 28, 29 years old. I was making 250 grand, but I couldn't scale beyond that 250 mark. And so I took a look at my client base and I said, half of my clients in lead generation were staffing and recruiting companies. I'm charging them $3,000 a month and they're sitting here making five, six, seven direct hire fees. Let me get into the recruitment business. And so in January of 2013, so over 11 years ago, wow, it seems like so long ago, I started a recruiting company by accident, right? But our claim to fame was lead generation. And so the way that we've been able to scale upwards of eight figures is by employing myself as the main lead generator and feeding these senior recruiters job orders all day.
Wow. That just goes to show how critical top of the funnel lead gen activities are to the success of any business and you know, recruiting firms in particular. So that's amazing. So started in 2011, was it?
2013.
So 2013, 11 years is what I was thinking that you've been going. And to get like, could you just talk through the journey of it was just you starting this recruiting business to the point now where, you know, you've got a significant operation. I mean, that's an incredible journey. What have been the kind of key milestones along the way?
Yeah. So the key milestones were, you know, kind of like servicing friends and family, word of mouth referrals. I think how most recruitment firms are built it up to about $1 million in maybe my third year in revenue. And then we saw the bottom fall out of the Houston economy in late 14, early 15, when the price of oil plummeted from 120 down to essentially 60 within 30 days. And so all of our clients at the time were in some way, shape or form related to oil and gas, just being in Houston, sure. Texas. And I saw my revenue go from about $100,000 a month to literally zero in January of 2015. And so I took a long, hard look in the mirror, spoke to my wife, and I said, do I need to shut the doors? Do I need to go get a full-time job? And I actually interviewed with our CRM vendor, a company called Job Science, which was a white-labeled applicant tracking system built on the Salesforce platform. And I got an offer to be an enterprise account executive. And golly, thankfully, I shut it down, right? And so that was kind of like the first pivotal moment in my career where I was faced with the real decision of, do I need to walk away from the business and go seek stability, right? Because we had had a newborn baby in the house now, right? And golly, in 2015, we had two kids. That was a pivotal moment.
Hey, Jeremy, let's just talk about that for a second, because that's, I think all seasoned entrepreneurs go through some adversity like that, but that doesn't, it's not fun, it's not easy, it's not pleasant. What was going through your head? Like, I know, and all our listeners know, like, to grow a business, start something and grow it is blood, sweat, and tears. You're really pouring your heart and soul into this thing. And then to get to the point where your revenue goes from 100K to zero, it must have been heartbreaking. What's going through your head? What's the conversation with your wife?
Yeah, so, you know, really it was, why, you know, I felt guilt, right, in not being the provider for the family anymore.
Yeah.
I felt shame that I didn't, you know, foresee a potential downturn and diversify into different areas where I wasn't as exposed. Mm. And really it was her that gave me the confidence to say, no, barrel through it. You know, I've got a good stable salary. This was her speaking to me. Mm. And, you know, and I trust that you're going to get through this. Right. And so May of 2015, I rebranded from the name of the lead generation company to Encore Search Partners. I was driving to work every day, and there was this sign called Encore Landscaping. And I love the name of the of the business, right? And so we're actually named after a small landscaping company in Rosenberg, Texas. But ESP, right? I mean, I think it's got a nice little ring to it, Encore Search Partners.
Yeah.
And so rebranded in 2015, went from just a local recruiting firm to diversifying nationwide, right? And employing those lead generation strategies on a national basis. One of the things that I did realize, though, is working in Houston, maybe at the time, we had about a 50% close ratio. But when you're working with firms in Chicago, in DC, in LA, you're not as familiar with the lay of the land. You're not as familiar with the source companies, right? And so our close ratio went down to about 10 to 15%. And so we actually needed more people in order to do the same amount of revenue, which was a little bit of a tough pill to swallow for me from an overhead standpoint, right? Mm. Because we're the type of environment that pays our people a base salary. It's not just a straight commission environment. Mm-hmm. And so I brought on a new vice president back in May of 2016, which was another pivotal moment in our growth. His name is Casey Knight. Casey now runs a 20-person team for Encore Search Partners recruiting in the financial services space. But that was the first time that I brought somebody in that had more technical competency than myself in a specific focus practice area. And so that was pivotal to our growth in recognizing that I didn't need to be the smartest person in the room, right? I could go out and snag somebody with a very aggressive compensation structure and have them bring on a complementary skill set and business yes. acumen and technical acumen, right? And so that was huge for our growth as well.
Jeremy, I'd love to dive into that. But first, I feel like there's more juice in the to squeeze out of this rebrand and kind of reset sure. of the business, because there may be people listening who are there right now, right? Mm-hmm. Like in certain sectors like technology, there's been a slowdown, and like a lot of recruiters have found like they were at an all-time high in, let's say, 2022 in terms of billings, and then 2023, 2024 has been tougher for a lot of folks. And so how did you build back up? Like, what was, I guess I'm thinking both from a mindset point of view as well as from a strategy point of view.
Yeah. So the short answer is I wasn't a recruiter before I got into the recruitment business, right? So I didn't have as emotional of a tie to, well, this is the way that we've always done it. This is how it's done, right? And so it allowed me to be creative. It allowed me to be innovative, right? And I wasn't, like I said, emotionally tied to the process, to the system, or even the company name. And so, you know, a lot of people, they were upset. You know, I'd had this company, Market Share Solutions, that I'd done for 2-3 years and built it up to 250K in net income, rather, not even just revenue. And, you know, people would say, well, what are you going to do with that business? Are you going to sell it? Are you going to monetize it? Are you going to hire someone to keep it going? And I said, no, I don't want to dilute my attention, right? I want to take all of those resources, take all of that attention and put it into something that's more going to create sustainable growth, right? And so I'll use the analogy of like, if I'm holding GE stock, and that's just what I've always held. If now I know that Amazon stock is going to outperform that over the next 10 years, why would I still hold that GE stock? Let me take that, right, and then reposition it for future monetary gain, right? And I think that that's one of the challenges for a lot of independent or small recruiting shops is they say, well, this is the way that we've always done it. This is my network. This is my candidate database. But what they're not realizing is they're at the mercy of the dynamics of the industry that they focus in. And if you're a good direct hire recruiter, you're going to be great recruiting lawyers, recruiting private equity professionals, manufacturing, industrial, technology. And so it's really a matter of staying nimble and staying agile and chasing the hot markets for sure.
Okay, interesting. So you were able to just think creatively and pivot. So what specific changes did you make? You said one of them was you expanded from focusing on Houston to recruiting nationally. So then you weren't as vulnerable to the change of the oil price going up and down. What other kind of key changes did you make that you think helped you get back on track?
Absolutely. So in October of 2016, I hired a vice president, which was purely an expense. His name is Scott Kelly. He was not a revenue producer at the time. And since then, over the past 8 years, he's actually been promoted twice from VP to COO, and now he's the president. But by hiring somebody to focus on processes, systems, and accountability to kind of turn us into a real company from just a lifestyle business really at the time, that's really allowed me to focus on marketing and business development. And then that's what helped us scale. And so Scott is kind of like that hired gun that keeps the wheels, right? Keeps the train on the track. That way I can continue to pour fuel into the engine to just help us go faster and faster and faster and faster. And so that was certainly pivotal to our growth as well.
So we're coming back to this idea of making key strategic hires. And so there was Scott first and then Casey, is that right?
Casey first and then Scott.
Then Scott. So let's talk about that, because I do think that what limits a lot of entrepreneurs is the owner tries to do everything themselves. But of course, as human beings, most of us are not great at everything, right? And apart from the fact that there's only so many hours in the day, and as you said something earlier about diluting attention, certainly focus is a superpower. If you can just focus your energies on what you do best and what you are most passionate about, then you're going to perform better, right? Than if you're doing a little bit of everything in a mediocre way. But then what scares people is it seems like a big risk. Like, I'm going to take on someone who, well, I guess there's a number of mental barriers. One, as you said, Casey had more experience in recruiting than you did, more technical competence, I think is what you said. And so there's that mental barrier to get over, hiring someone who's better than you at something. But secondly, it's the, you know, it's a big addition to your overhead. So talk me through your thought process, how you came to that decision, how did you weigh it up, and then, you know, how has that ultimately paid off for you?
Oh, man, how did I come to the decision? You know, I think it was maybe my wife complaining that I was working too much, right, or that I wasn't a present father, and I was sitting there on my cell phone when my son was coming and pulling at my leg saying, Daddy, play Legos, right? And I think that that's one of the common mistakes that solopreneurs and small business owners have, is they really throw themselves into their business and take their eye off of the reason why they became an entrepreneur in the first place, right? That time freedom and that financial freedom. So really just, you know, listening to her and you know, looking at these strategic hires as investments and not expenses, I think was very pivotal to our growth. Absolutely. And so, you know, I vividly remember I was sitting in a Vistage group, with Scott. So he was the senior operations manager for a managed IT outsourcing company. So Scott, who's now the president of Encore Search Partners, didn't have any recruiting experience either. The CEO and the president. but he was an expert in EOS, the entrepreneurial operating system, right? But I was complaining, man, my recruiters, they're taking 2-hour lunch breaks, they're lazy, they're not focused, they're not disciplined. And he said, well, golly, you must be losing a lot of money. And I said, well, what are you talking about, man? I made $500,000 last year. And so he was very surprised at kind of like hearing about the margins in the direct hire business, right? And saying, mm-hmm. golly, if you're this dysfunctional and you're still that financially stable and successful, what would happen if you did put in processes, systems, accountability, scalability, mm-hmm. right? And so he's kind of the one that planted the seed to create his own position because he wanted to be a vice president before he turned 30. And I'm proud to say when he joined Encore as VP in 2016, he did it with 1 month to spare, right? And so, you know, don't be afraid to give away the title, right? I think that that's one thing that small business owners should recognize too is titles are cheap, right? Now, granted, you don't want to call someone a VP, introduce them to your clients and be exposed to them, you know, poaching your clients or embarrassing you as an organization. But I think that that was pivotal to our success in 2017 was implementing EOS and really defining our mission, our vision, and our values and holding steadfast to interviewing, hiring, coaching, and firing to those values has been important as well.
Absolutely. I'd love to get into that. You said something like employees are investments. Are you familiar with Coach Dan Sullivan up in Toronto?
I'm not, no.
Okay, because he wrote a book called Who Not How. He's written a few books. One okay. that you might like is called 10X is Easier Than 2X. Okay. But his other book was called Who Not How. And he's like, instead of focusing, if you want to grow your business, instead of asking the question, how are we going to accomplish that goal? The question is instead, who do we need to hire who will accomplish that goal for us? And that your employees are not costs, they're investments. Now you can make good or bad investments, but ultimately that's the it's a different mindset. And I think you share that mindset in making these key hires because you could see how much better off you're going to be by bringing in people with that expertise. So, you know, Casey having the technical recruiting experience and successful track record, then Scott having the EOS knowledge and so that all makes sense. Before we talk about EOS and developing your values, your vision, mission, and all that, could you just map out for us, like over the last 11 years, Jeremy, like the sort of how your headcount has grown from just being you to the present? Like what were the kind of stages of that growth?
Yeah, so the short answer is when you look at April of 2020, which was kind of like the beginning of COVID, I looked at our employee of the month, which we always recognize. I ended up giving it to everybody in the company. And so everybody got their employee of the month bonus. Everybody got their extra day of PTO. And I looked at that graphic and I noticed that we had only had 16 people. And I looked at my IT director and I go, we were only at 16 during COVID. And he goes, yeah, we've only recently grown. And so the short answer is we were small for many, many, many years. And then when we had clarity around EOS and put in that infrastructure to scale with mid-level managers that could recruit, train, and mentor and develop early career recruitment talent, that's whenever we really started to grow. And so, you know, 2 employees in 2013, and then, you know, probably hired 1 every 6 months or so. Yeah, we would have some turnover because, you know, we didn't really have a tremendous amount of structure with regards to KPIs or training. I'm sure a lot of people listening can resonate with that. And then since 2020 is really whenever we started to scale. And so 2020, we did about $4.2 million in revenue. Like I said, with 16 employees. Then we did 4.8, then 7.8, then 11. And then, so 11 million in 2022, which we were really capitalizing like most direct hire recruiting firms on the PPP infusion, the ERC infusion companies. It was a money grab in the professional services space, right? And then we did take a little bit of a step back in 23 down to 10 million. And then I'm confident that this year we'll hit 13 million with 38 employees. So
amazing.
When you look at the revenue per person,
yeah,
you know, it's been awesome to see us go from that like 250 per head to 325 per head, right? We're just more profitable per person because we're pickier. We don't go for the 80K jobs anymore. You know, we try to stick with that 150 and above. We've got a firm floor on our direct hire recruitment fee. And if somebody wants to retain us for a 70K or 80K job at 25,000 is the minimum, guys, right? And so when you develop that reputation of being true outbound headhunters, then that creates an environment where companies want to work with us. We're not just out there chasing to go work with them.
Fantastic. I think that actually tracking your billings per head is a really good metric for entrepreneurs to focus on. That's actually one we tell our clients. We have two different coaching programs, Jeremy. One is for the solo practitioners and really small boutique firms. And the one is for the firms which are scaling and really want to grow and, you know, build a business that runs without the CEO running a desk. So one of those numbers that we need to track is, you know, GP per head.
Yep.
And the fact, and 325 is fantastic. Great job.
Thank you. Yeah. And I think that, I think the general rule of thumb for any professional service firm, whether you're a law firm, a private equity firm, a public accounting firm, is 250 is a healthy business, right? Mm-hmm. But, you know, whenever I noticed that we were approaching 300, that's what gave me the confidence to say, let me hire some overhead, right? We're almost a little bit too fat and we're not capitalizing on reinvesting in our growth. And so about a year ago, we hired a digital marketing coordinator. And so we started to produce our own podcast. That produces a tremendous amount of like shorts and reels that get published on Instagram and LinkedIn, which creates a tremendous amount of brand loyalty and community engagement, right, with our commentary through the reels. And then it's allowed us to do some really sophisticated, cool, essentially employee highlight videos and promo videos, which has created a tremendous amount of demand for competing recruiters that want to come work for us. Whenever they see that Christina Lyles joined the firm in January of 2020, and since then she's been promoted three times. She's now the VP of our legal department. And she had no recruitment experience, right? She had a degree from Texas A&M in construction science. She had been at a tax consulting firm for 5 years. She came to us as a candidate and said, hey, can you place me? I saw something special there. And I said, hey, come to recruitment. And, you know, in 2022, she made over $700,000 in her third year in the industry. Right.
Wow. I mean, that's a fantastic huge. Story. Yeah. I love that.
And so when other individuals hear that story, maybe they don't say, hey, Jeremy, I want to come work for you, but you better believe they say, how? How did she do it? And then we get to share our lead generation roots, our process, our system, our people, right? Our culture. And then that's what piques their interest in order for them to come bring their book of business over to Encore.
Love it. That is brilliant. I love that. Mm-hmm. And so we've got a few different things I want to cover. One is definitely want to talk about EOS. It's a book that we actually recommend. Well, there's Traction and Rocket Fuel by the same author. And we recommend those to our coaching clients. Could you say more about how EOS has impacted your growth as a business, Jeremy?
Yeah, so it just gives us a tremendous amount of clarity to where we can move much quicker than we did before, right? And so EOS is essentially a toolbox of tools that you can implement in any entrepreneurial owned business in order to implement processes, systems, and accountability so you can scale. And so the things that it's done for us is during our quarterly executive offsites, where the four of us executives visit, we IDS, right? We identify issues, we discuss them, and then we solve them. And sometimes we solve them by implementing new processes or systems, or sometimes it's people, right? Mm-hmm. But when we have clarity in those executive offsites and we present our plan to our team in that quarterly town hall, we're essentially saying, hey guys, we need a new CRM. I don't care if it costs $100,000. If I tell my whole team that I'm going to do it, you better believe that there's upward accountability to make sure it gets done, right? And so by saying it out loud, saying what we're going to do and then doing what we say, that's really allowed us to grow, because I think that so many entrepreneurs just sit on go, right? And sometimes that, you know, just moving in any direction, right? You're going to make progress. And there's so many people that fear change and they don't want to grow. They want to grow the top line, but they're not willing to grow themselves, right? I think that's one of the biggest hurdles in entrepreneurialism.
It makes a lot of sense, Jeremy. Mm-hmm. Could you give an example of, you know, either a system or a process that you've put in place that's kind of just given you that structure in order to scale?
Yeah. So, you know, the things that I do well are marketing and job order intakes, right?
Okay.
And then I've always been kind of like that corporate recruiter that's been responsible for recruiting and training and mentoring early career recruiters. And so one of the things that we implemented was creating a mid-level manager role of pure overhead. Her title is manager of talent acquisition, learning and development, right? So essentially recruiting and training. And this was an individual that was essentially an HR manager for another tax consulting firm. And she had had no recruitment experience, but she had been friends with me socially for 5 years. And she had seen the growth of the brand. She'd seen the growth of myself as a father, right? As an entrepreneur, as somebody that was super participatory in the community. So essentially she drank the Kool-Aid even before she came to work here, right? And so I think that's kind of like bodes into what you were talking about earlier with Dan Sullivan. It was who, not how. And so that was one of the things that we implemented, was somebody that maybe didn't have the technical skill set to be employed in the role that she was hired for, but she had the work ethic, the coachability, and the desire to learn. She's been instrumental to our growth, because I'm no longer the bottleneck in recruiting, interviewing, and training our people. Right. And I was finding that I was not hiring because, like, I was making money. And it was like, well, shit, if I'm already making $1 million, why would I work twice as hard to make what, 1.2? You know, I think there's a lot of entrepreneurs out there that get lazy whenever the way that they should view it is, hey, look, I might be making $1 million. Let me give her $100,000. Now I'm making 900. But because of the processes and systems that she implements, now my 900 in net income is going to go up to 1.5. And then when you get there and you say, well, why am I doing job order intakes? Let's hire this guy who used to run internal recruitment for Meta and Amazon, who's a very sophisticated MBA that has 14 years of recruitment experience. Let me hire him to do job order intakes, right? And then, yeah, I did have to carve out 250 of what I pay him. And then I took that step back from 1.5 in net income down to 1.25 in theory. But because of his processes and systems that he's created, boom, now we're at 2.5 million in EBITDA, right? And so looking at everybody and say, these are investments that are going to create scalability and growth, and not looking at so much as overhead, but as eliminating a bottleneck in the process for scalability. Mm-hmm. And so essentially my job as the CEO of Encore Search Partners is to literally work myself out of a job by hiring people that do things better than I do. Even if I'm really, really good at it, right? And saying if somebody is solely dedicated on it, of course they're going to become better than me. And why shouldn't they?
Absolutely. I agree 100%. And so you hired someone who didn't, this is the recruiting and training person.
Her name is Jacqueline. Yep.
Jacqueline. So she didn't have recruiting experience, but she had the right attitude, mindset, work ethic. And that's another key, is if hiring people, that is, if you have to choose between someone who's got the right mindset versus someone who's got the skill set, 100% every time I'm going to choose the mindset, because they can learn the skill set, right?
Absolutely, without a doubt. And you
how,
know, I
go
wouldn't
ahead.
have known that unless we implemented EOS and clearly defined those core values and did those, you know, performance reviews and benchmarked who are our rock stars, who are the high performers. And we found it wasn't always the most educated person or the person that had 3, 4 years of industry experience before they come on board. I mean, granted, there's obviously some benefit of hiring people that have industry experience because they introduce you to, hey, we utilize this tool at this firm, and it's something that you didn't even know existed, right? And so there are benefits of bringing in people that have experience, but the individuals that end up becoming the rock stars and high performers that are sticky to the organization quite often are individuals we groomed in-house.
That's really interesting. I've observed that as well. Quick question. How big were you when you hired Jacqueline?
Oh, we were already 35 employees, 11 million in
35?
revenue.
Okay. Because sometimes people ask me, like, because normally it's the owner who is the also the main internal talent acquisition person, right? They're recruiting for their own firm. And they're also usually the one who's training and coaching everybody. But as you say, you become a bottleneck, and it's almost like, well, because you're running your own desks, generating clients and everything else, and then it's going to take time away from that to hire and train people. So people ask how big should you be before you hire somebody who's dedicated to doing that? And I don't know if there's a right answer, but what do you think?
You know, I only have exposure to the direct hire environment, not contract staffing. So I don't think that it's tied to headcount. I think it's tied to EBITDA probably, right? And so, you know, I think that once you get to that 500,000 in net income, you should hire a true COO, right? Because you can carve out 150, 180, 200, however much it takes in order to get somebody that's processes and systems oriented. And the difference between 350 in net income and 500, right? Your needs are probably met. You're driving the same car, you're living in the same house, your kids are going to the same school. But by putting in that individual that can focus on running the business, so the entrepreneur can focus on revenue generation and become that true chief revenue officer, right? That will accelerate EBITDA from then now 350 to hopefully 750 or seven figures, rather, right? And so I think that's critically important. Once you get to that seven figure mark in EBITDA, I think there's quite a few direct hire recruitment firm owners. They look in the mirror and say, I've made it. I'm successful,
Absolutely.
right? And I'll tell you, when I joined the Entrepreneurs Organization, EO, in 2018, I thought I was successful whenever I was making $500,000 a year. But now I'm in forum with guys that are not making $1 million a year. They're making $1 million a month. And I'm looking at these guys and going, holy shit, they don't even have to go to work. They have infrastructure, they have resources, systems, processes. They have invested in mid-level managers. And they're reaping the rewards of the investments that they've made, right? And so I think exposing myself to EO was very, very important because it showed me that $1 million a year is not successful, right? It's a good milestone that you should celebrate, but I think that success is tied to freedom. That's been my experience. Financial freedom and time freedom.
Totally agree 100%. I think you've alluded a few times to the fact that your kind of core strength going way back is on lead generation, and that still in the business, that's a part of your role is generating clients so that everybody else benefits from that. Could you share a little bit more about what your methodology is, Jeremy?
Yeah, certainly. So, you know, in 2013, I started content marketing on LinkedIn, right? And so, you know, essentially storytelling. And what I found is people really resonated with the authenticity of real, authentic stories of something that had happened that day at the office that either made me laugh or made me pissed off, right? Mm. Because if you can induce an emotion from your audience, that mm-hmm. really creates resonance. I don't think that our audience wants to see five tips on how to make your resume more marketable. Mm. But if I can tell a story about how I placed a candidate as an engineering manager at an engineering and architecture firm in Beaumont, Texas, and on his first day, he creeped out the office manager and ended up getting terminated, right? Maybe people can resonate with that story,
right?
Or about the guy that would go to the executive assistant's office and eat all the blue M&Ms, right? it's like, hey, one time I had a guy that did that at my office, and he was a complete weirdo, and now he works from home, and he's the highest performer in the company, right? But the point is like authenticity was important through storytelling. And then obviously I had email marketing background. You know, in 2013, we were seeing, 8% reply rates, right? Which mm-hmm. were decent back then, with a 70% open rate. I think with the sophistication in email servers and AWS and Gmail servers, we're seeing a sub 1% reply, mm-hmm. with only about an 18% open rate. And we have to do a good job of making sure that we change our domains. We have IP mm-hmm. ranges. We have so many different sophisticated technology tools to make sure that we don't get blacklisted. But even email marketing has lost its allure to some extent, right? Then we hopped on the AI train, right? Mm-hmm. In populating information based on what AI could capture from somebody's LinkedIn. And we capitalized on that for a year or two. But what happens is you have to get ahead of it. You have to be an innovator, and then your competitors all kind of catch up to it. And then they essentially like dilute the market. And so we try to constantly look for new innovative ways to steal market share. And then it's a matter of just, hiring good old fashioned manual labor to maintain the relationship with those clients in order to make sure you get that repeat business. But, I think another thing that we implemented is anytime I received an unsolicited message of somebody that was trying to sell me insurance or payroll or applicant tracking or whatever, I would ask that person, hey, what tool did you utilize? Because if you were getting into my inbox, kudos to you. I need to learn what tool that is, right? And so really looking at what individuals were doing in adjacent industries and implementing that in my own business was critically important as well.
Smart. Mm-hmm. So far, it seems like the two pillars are content and email. Is that, are those like two critical elements? And is there anything else in your arsenal that is a regular source of jobs for you guys?
I mean, there's certainly other things, right? But I don't want to go too much into detail, right? But real-time information is probably how I'll say it, right? So let's just say if I have a mechanism that can alert me on every time a decision maker joined a new organization,
yeah,
and I was the first person to call them, email them, and send them a piece of direct mail, right?
Yeah.
That might make an impression on that new director of talent acquisition that's working for a 2,000-person chemical manufacturer in Baton Rouge, Texas, right? Getting in her email before she's even on ZoomInfo, before her email box is full of spam, right? Yep. Getting that meeting and making sure that we're top of mind for sure has been critical to our success.
Fantastic. That's cool. Yeah, we talk about triggers. And so if someone has recently started a new job and they're a hiring manager or a decision maker in your space, that's a great time to reach. That could trigger a campaign, right? Which could include email, reaching out on LinkedIn, telephone calls, whatever else you do to win business. And we have about 8 or 9 different frameworks that we teach our clients for, client acquisition. That's one of them is new jobs, someone starting a new job. And then with regards to your LinkedIn content, before we leave email, is that all centrally controlled by the business, or does each individual have their own email cadences going?
Great question. So it's all controlled by the business. And I think that that does two things. Number one, it allows us to have a lower commission structure for our recruiters because they know that the company invests in marketing and technology in order to accelerate right. their growth, right?
And so the jobs are coming into them and exactly. they're, yeah, got yeah. it.
So number one, our gross margin is higher, even though we have that corporate overhead of that marketing and technology infrastructure. Yeah. And number two, our turnover is lower and our client stickiness, right? Our recruiter stickiness, because they're not running a true full 360 desk, we're less exposed to them leaving and taking their book of business to another organization or essentially just starting their own because they're addicted to those corporate resources, right?
Oh yeah, absolutely. Yeah. They make it so good. Why would they want to go where it's hard? It's hard, right?
It is hard.
Trying to do everything yourself, running a 360 desk without those tools, the infrastructure, the support, it's hard.
I hope she doesn't hear this podcast, but I went out last night with some friends out on 20th Street here in Houston in the Heights. And one of our former employees that was actually our rookie of the year in 2022, she left at a year and a half to go start her own business. And I saw her and she thought it was going to be weird. I thought it was fantastic. And then my buddy walks up to me who still keeps in touch with her and says, man, she's not even in the industry anymore. She's a bartender. Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
And this was somebody who made $208,000 in her rookie year in personal income.
Wow.
Granted, you know, she was very talented or is very yeah. talented. But I think that people need to recognize that those resources and infrastructure create a tremendous amount of accountability and structure in order to mm-hmm. leverage on somebody's skills in order to yield big results.
It makes sense. So if you're running the business or like the campaign centrally, do tasks get assigned to the recruiters to follow up or make phone calls or... You know, are they integrated into that process?
Absolutely. So essentially the phone rings to them. They don't ring to a corporate resource.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. But it's the mechanism that's driven by a corporate resource.
Okay.
So almost like a lead generation team, if you will.
Got it. Okay. Mm-hmm. And then with the LinkedIn, like the content you're putting out, you've got your podcast and then you've got all the clips and reels and everything. And you talked about storytelling. Does everybody do that? Or is that again, like basically more around the business brand and around your personal brand, Jeremy?
So we have three individuals that essentially produce content for the organization. They're all corporate mm-hmm. resources. So myself, mm-hmm. The entrepreneur, Jacqueline, who is the Latina recruiting manager, right? And so people see diversity in leadership, right? Mm-hmm. And then Hobart Ruffin, who's our director of growth, who's a black male that has mm-hmm. an advanced degree, right? And so when you have an integrated approach to diversity, inclusion, development, corporate resources, overhead, we do attract different types of clients that want to come work at our organization.
Mm. Okay, fantastic. That's interesting. Okay, awesome. What do you feel has been the biggest challenge after the oil price crash and then you rebuilt from there, in more recent times, what's been the biggest challenge you've had to navigate, Jeremy?
Oh, man, people. Absolutely.
Okay.
Gossip, entitlement, conflict, right? You know, I think that once you get to a certain headcount, that's one of the benefits of remaining small and employing only your friends and family, right? Is maybe the amount of drama is reduced, right? And when you start approaching 40, 50, 80 employees, you do get drama, right? And so creating a culture to where, you know, I can address things before they become big issues by citing one of the core values and say, hey, look, gratitude. Mm-hmm. Hey, professionalism, coachability, resilience, right? These are all pillars to our success. And it's not me attacking a high-performing individual if I need to call them out because I'm citing one of the company core values. It disarms it, right?
Yes, absolutely. Let's talk about the values then. I had them written down here somewhere.
Could just give them to you real quick.
All right, go for it.
Yeah, so excellence is our number one core value. Excellence doesn't mean perfection, but it means the constant pursuit of excellence, being better today than I was yesterday, continuous improvement, right? Number two is resilience, right? In this industry, you're going to get faced with more no's than yeses. And so we require mental toughness, contagious optimism, right, in order to be successful. And because that's a company core value, we can be very transparent during the interview process of somebody that's never worked in the recruitment industry of saying, hey, you know, cold calling, cold email, cold text message, when you've got a 2% engagement rate, that's a W. Right. But if you're not transparent about that, then maybe people can feel like they're failing whenever they first started this industry. Right. Gratitude is also a company core value. And that makes it very easy for me as the entrepreneur to express gratitude to my team, because I'm constantly staring at a wall each and every day that says gratitude is a company core value. But by having that on the wall and being steadfast and accountable to making sure that I'm grateful down and the employees are grateful up, it eliminates ego, it eliminates entitlement, and gratitude is really a core component. Professionalism is our newest core value, right? Mm-hmm. That's kind of like all encompassing about, you know, respect, code of conduct, communication style, dress code. Professionalism is a core value. Coachable is a core value, right? And so you don't need to be an expert. Right. You're allowed to fail, but it's how you learn from those mistakes and how you, react to one-on-one coaching and criticism that can create success for yourself. Meticulous, our average fee is $54,000. Right. So comparatively speaking, if we were a real estate firm, that means that the average house that we sold was about $1.8 million. Right. And so we're a little bit more upmarket than a traditional direct hire recruiting firm. Right. Mm-hmm. And so our clients require and deserve a massive element of consistency and meticulousness in working with Encore Search. And then the seventh core value, which is probably my favorite, is competitive. If I have individuals that are truly competitive, intrinsically motivated, I don't need to micromanage them because they're going to micromanage themselves because they want to beat their numbers last week, right? This week. They want to compete not only against their peers, but themselves. That's amazing.
Love it. Yeah, those are awesome. And so you gave a little example earlier about how important the values are in terms of hiring, as well as coaching and managing people, as well as deciding who shouldn't be here. Could you give a little more detail about how specifically you really live the values and make them like a real, they're not just a sign on the wall, but they are actually part of how you communicate with each other on a day-to-day?
Absolutely. So first of all, they are on the wall in our huge lobby. It's essentially like a big wrap that's maybe 40 feet by, the size of the height of the wall. So massive. And it's just like a repetition of the core values, maybe each word in huge font, 10 different times. A word cloud, if you will. We've got them in the conference room. We've got it on everybody's mouse pads, everybody's screensaver. And so the values are constantly in your face. Our performance reviews are our core values, right? How does Vincent stack up for gratitude, professionalism, coachable, meticulous, right? And so all of our coaching sessions, we talk about the values. But one of the things that we've implemented in our level 10 meetings, for us, it's our weekly all hands meeting on Mondays at 2 p.m. Central, is we have core value spotlights where the employees spotlight their peers and saying, hey, I'd like to recognize, Juan for competitive. Whenever I was leaving at 5:01, Juan was still there. And instead of walking out to the parking garage with me, he said he wanted to stay until he got another submittal. And it was awesome whenever I saw it come through the email, that Juan got an amazing submittal at 5:19. And if he had clocked out and left right at 5, he would have missed out on that opportunity. So I want to recognize Juan for competitive. So the point is by employing that core value spotlight and every single week hearing 15 of your peers spotlight one of their peers, it really breeds, man, I want the recognition. I want the words of affirmation, right? And the affirmation doesn't need to come from leadership in order to be fulfilling. That's one of the things that I found as well.
I love that core value spotlight, Jeremy. That's fantastic. Yeah. And is that, what are the rules that govern that? Is it purely spontaneous or is there purely a system for people? Okay.
Yeah. So our L10 meeting, right? Updates. We talk about the KPIs from the previous week. Then we do our updates, right? We talk about business high, personal high. And then we jump right into the core value spotlights and people stand up, they speak in front of their peers. And you know what? It gives me a tremendous amount of visibility into some of the things that happen on the desk level that I wouldn't traditionally be exposed to as the CEO of the company, right? And it also shows me of like, who are the people that garner the respect from their colleagues, right? And the individuals that I view as a bench for future leaders in the organization, right?
Yes.
But I should know that, you know, Simon, our top producer from last year, sat down for 20 minutes and coached Katie, right, through a new pitch for Comerica Bank, right? I should know that. And if I didn't have that core value spotlight where she was expressing gratitude, right, for Simon, I wouldn't have generally known that he took the time to do that, right?
I love that. That's fantastic. In terms of building culture, you know, and rewarding, and by rewarding, I mean recognizing the things that as an organization we value, the things that are most important to us and the way that we engage with each other and with our clients and candidates. That's what makes your organization special and more sticky, right? I noticed you've won like Best Place to Work for Houston Business Journal and various other things. Apart from the values, which we've talked about, why else do you think you've won that Best Place to Work award?
So transparency is really key to our culture, right? Whenever we let somebody go, whenever they quit, we address it. We don't hide from it. We cite the core values. And then, you know, it's not gossip and it's not disparagement, right? But I think that if you hide from, hey guys, last month we lost $83,000 in net income. Right. There was the way that the accounting worked and then this deal, this is going to get funded next week. And so we're on track to build this. We forecast the profit of this. Right. When you get ahead and you're transparent around the growth, the success, the failure, the regret, the guilt, the shame, breeding that trust. Right. That's what really creates, I think, a positive culture. Absolutely.
That's brilliant. I like that. So it's so interesting because a lot of owners don't want to talk about numbers with their team, right? But you're celebrating the revenue, the profit, and everything. That's public knowledge then.
Absolutely. And then there's not gossip around, oh man, our CEO just bought a Ferrari last week. You know, are we going to be doing layoffs? How's he going to pay for this?
Right, exactly.
But no, you know, they've been hearing about the growth and success for years, right? And they're happy. Because
we want, we want people, we want to be part of something successful, right? And so that is, you know, success breeds confidence in a way. But then also you're sharing when there's potentially negative news, you're getting out in front of that and being transparent about that as well.
Absolutely key. Yeah. And I think so many people, myself included, in our early years, I would hide from we're losing money. We made a bad investment. It's a failed ATS implementation. You know, hey, XYZ person quit because of whatever. It doesn't even get addressed. But when you hide from it, it, you know, people start to overthink. Right. Yeah. And when you have that element of uncertainty, then that's what causes individuals to peek around to go see what else is out there because they think that the grass may be greener whenever you just get ahead of it. I think I learned that through going through a divorce and marriage counseling, you know, and saying like honesty is the best policy.
Right. Yeah, absolutely. That's awesome. And so what are the future plans then for ESP?
You know, the future plans are really continuing to invest in our lead generation system. You know, I think that that's what will breed growth and success in the organization. And we have a very sophisticated system for recruiting, onboarding, and training new recruiters, right? Mm-hmm. And I think that the lead generation system will be amazing bait to bring in subject matter experts in complementary practice areas. So if we already know we're the best in recruiting attorneys, wealth advisors, we know that that same process and system will work for architects, consulting engineers, public accountants, right? Investment banking associates. And really investing in recruiting in environments where our clients' people are their most valuable asset. That's going to be our growth and success engine.
All right. Love it. Jeremy, this was fun. Thanks for being on the Resilient Recruiter podcast.
Excellent. Thank you for having me, Mark.